podcast is a member of WildGamesProductions.com and D20Radio.com.
Products of your imagination.
You burst through the door, you find a small room filled with golden jewels and a red dragon.
Products of your imagination.
And a red dragon. And a red dragon.
Products
he
of
starts
your imagination.
Save or die!
Raise them up, raise them up. Zombies all around me, I be hacking them all up.
Products of your imagination.
I be hacking them all up. There's zombies all around me, I be hacking them all up.
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classical Dungeons & Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Adventure number 37 of the Save or Die podcast. This week, we have some special guests on. I'm DM Vince, along with DM Glenn, as usual. Glenn, how are we this week?
Are you talking to this thing? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that thing.
Who
right
are
now
you people? Oh, you're Vince.
That's right. I'm Vince. And it's a special crossover from the WGPN family. We have DM Nick from the Roll for Initiative podcast finally on the show.
Nick couldn't make it. This is Christopher Walken. I'm calling in on the Skype.
Oh, I'm
it's
sorry.
Nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing.
At least it wasn't trash.
Yeah, sure. Christopher, can you put on Nick, please?
Nah, I'm here.
Oh, you tricked me.
Oh, boy, yeah. Oh, mother, get a load of me, boy.
And we have us joining with us, Mr. Full On Gamer from the D20 Radio Forums, as well as OSR Gaming Forums. How are we this week?
Welcome, guys. Glad to join you. This is Full-On Gamer Field Reporting for the Gamer Nation and D20 Radio.
That's right.
That's right. He's out in the field doing his thing for the U.S.
That's correct.
In a secret location.
Yes. Shh, don't tell. So, Glenn.
Very secret.
Emails.
Well, first rule of emails, you do not talk about emails.
So, the second rule of emails is, Glenn, read the emails.
I guess so. We've got one. From
it's
Lon,
emailed.
Huh?
From who?
from Lon Varnador. I think I pronounced that right.
Okay.
He says, "Love the podcast. I must say, I like the intro you used for Adventure 34. I love the song and thought it was great that you used it. Thank you."
Oh, that's a new one. That's right. Yeah.
That's our. What do we call it? The Techno Mix.
The Techno Mix. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's totally rocking.
Ah, thank you. I did that. Also, I had a friend who did the freezer trick, except that he just put the D20 in the freezer without water. We took a break after an hour or so and went outside. He then called out what this was a sacrifice to the great Gygax. We were, still are, playing first edition Hackmaster mashup of Temple of Elemental Evil.
Woohoo!
It went well, the punishment was severe, and yet I was clipped by a shard of plastic.
Nah.
Keep up the great work, guys. All of the classic D&D podcasts are amazing. Lon. Thank you, Lon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
So he used a Hackmaster game to sacrifice a D20. Wow.
Nice.
Nice. We're still getting dice stories from that show.
Yes.
That's only one of the dice tricks. The freezer trick I was talking about before was the other one. It's actually a cheater plan. Kind of does it's the same theory as the heating thing, except using cold as your base to adjust the die before you slam it on something.
Ah. Hmm. You know, I tried that the other day. I took one of my pound of dice, and I tried the microwave trick.
A pound of
dice?
Didn't work. Wow.
Didn't work. Good thing, because I didn't want to waste a die, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's our emails.
Great. If you want to email us, you can email us at saveordiepodcast@gmail.com. Or hop on the forums, OSR Gaming or d20radio.com forums, and we have two forums there.
Yeah.
Chat us up.
Please do. So
you have three.
Yeah. So, what did you guys do for gaming this week? Why don't we start with Full On?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get to do a lot of DM behind the scenes plotting and planning and maybe writing stuff. That's about it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's acceptable here. I mean, there's a lot of times we don't get to do anything either. What you been up to, Nick?
Nothing really this week. some planning going on. Just kind of foreseeing what's going to be in our future for our game group, because my friend Jeff, in about 2 months, he's going to be deployed to Afghanistan. In the National Guard. So we're going to put a halt to our current campaign, and we'll restart it when he gets back. So I got to figure out what we're going to do in that year that he's going to be gone. So I don't know if someone else is going to take the reins of being DM, or we're going to try something new. I want to try to get a game started with the kids again. As soon as they get back from their aunts in Florida, I'm going to see about my kids and a few others in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Play like a basic D&D type game.
That's fun. Cool. So, what about you, Vince? I'm sorry.
No, so that's pretty much where I'm going.
Okay, cool. Actually, I've been writing for the past couple of days a D6 Star Wars adventure that I've been trying to think up.
That's right.
I've been in the mood for that, and I was actually reading the other night 80s Action Cartoon Hour, Season 2.
Cartoon Action Hour, yes.
Cartoon Action Hour, yeah, 80s season or whatever it's called. Fun little game. You might want to check it out if you find a copy of it somewhere.
Written by Cynthia Celeste Miller.
Spectrum Games is the company.
Well, I got the Marvel books in the mail, courtesy of Vince, because my grandson wants to play superheroes.
Yay.
And I've been reading through them, and unfortunately, I got all the rest of the books the same day I had to decided to read X3, so I had to stop what I was doing and read X3, but all in the meantime, wanting to read Marvel. But I've pretty much got it down now, so we can play. So sometime this weekend, the grandsons and I are going to sit down. They've got characters, so we're going to sit down, and I don't know what I'm going to inflict on them, but it should be something good.
Kind of related to that, how many of you guys how many of you guys are pretty excited about the Captain America film coming out?
I'm a little bit excited about it. I don't know anything about it. I've just seen the posters and stuff. I haven't seen any previews yet, though.
I saw the previews. To me, it looks really good. I think they're keeping well within the history of the character. So
good.
Meh.
Yeah, it's definitely a World War II set, which is great.
Yeah.
Looks like a good prequel to the Avengers movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which they're filming up here, almost in my backyard up here in Cleveland.
Yeah, wow. after the Avengers... Oh, they're filming the Avengers up there?
Yeah, they're filming the Avengers movie up in Cleveland, Ohio this summer.
Wow. Yep. That's cool.
They're doing casting calls.
They're doing casting calls?
Yeah, they already did a little over a month ago, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay,
so,
cool.
For walk-ons and stuff like that.
Yeah. Did you go try out, Nick? Did you try out?
No, because I have a real job, fortunately.
I've done extra work every once in a while, but for, like, they move the camera, it blurs, you don't see me, but I got paid for it, so I don't care.
Hey, $100 is $100.
Yeah, $100 is $100. There you go. That's what we've been doing.
Yeah, so if you want to find out more what we're doing, you can either follow us on Twitter or Facebook or any other spots.
SaberDiePodcast@gmail.com.
There you go. Let's head into Game On. Not full on game, but Game On. So for Game On this week...
Game On, full on gamer, yeah.
Game On!
Oh, yeah.
Giggity, giggity. We have the gamer's friend called Mapping AIDS. One of the responsibilities I absolutely positively hate about being a player is mapping.
You don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. Only when your DM lies to you. Only when the DM lies to you, and of course he's going to lie to you, but hey, that's part of the risk.
No, I'm the kind of guy who wants the DM to lean over his screen with the vis-a-vis pen and draw me where I'm supposed to be. Instead of having to take the graph paper and go, okay, it's a 45-degree angle, right? Okay, does that look right? Okay, fine.
So, the first topic we have here is, do you map? No, I do not map. I can't stand mapping. I'd rather just get lost.
Now, is that both? Is a DM and a player? Or?
No, as a DM, I'll have my map, but as a player, I will not map. I refuse to map.
Yeah, I always sucker somebody else to do it.
Nick, you seem like
probably
a mapper.
Probably me, because I love to map.
Oh, there we go. There's our mapper.
You like to map, huh?
I probably do too.
I like mapping.
If I'm the player, I don't mind doing the map being a duty. If no one else will take it, I'll do it. I mean,
well, one thing I really hate about mapping is the fact you have to. It takes away from the adventure. How big was that room? How long was that hallway? Which way was that? It's like, come on.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can understand.
Too many distractions.
Well, it depends on how you're. Yeah. It depends on how you're going to handle your mapping. There are some times when we've adventured where we've done the whole. Okay, he told us it was a 30-foot hallway with a 10-foot ceiling, and it's, you know, two passages at the 5-foot and the 20-foot and 30-foot mark, but other times it's just kind of fast and loose. You got a long hallway, you got the openings to the left and right, and you don't even need graph paper to map that way. I've had people where they don't use graph paper because your adventurers don't have graph paper. You just map it out on a piece of blank sheet as if you were drawing it to the best you can, and it's not going to be perfectly to scale, but that's fine because you'll end up messing up somewhere along the line anyway.
That's interesting.
I've heard of that approach, and it's actually kind of cool because it's a balance between, you know, doing the mapping for the party, but still kind of being in character. You're almost in the moment, like you have that piece of little, you know, vellum or scratch paper, and you're trying to do it as best as you can. It's almost bringing it to close to home there.
For the most part, I've mainly. If I was in a game, most of the time the DMs would have the battle man out there and just like, okay, we go through the dungeon or the wilderness, or okay, you see this, that, and the other thing, and they give you a description. And if something major is happening, like you're jumped by a bunch of whites, he'll like, you know, just take the vis-a-vis and go, okay, here's the thing, place yourselves, where are you? And then he puts the guys down, and we, you know, you go through the battle. And then after the battle, it's just like, okay, treasure, and we're on, and, you know, we don't think about the maps anymore until...
Yeah, I think a lot of people do it that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we do something similar in my group. In fact, I mentioned this on the other podcast that he made a huge table, and he... I don't know if it was a spray paint or it was a can paint, but there's a paint I think you could buy at Home Depot or Lowe's that is... It's chalkboard paint.
Oh.
You put it down, and it creates a chalkboard for you on any surface.
That's neat.
And he made a chalkboard surface and took the time with permanent marker and made 1-inch grid on the whole top.
With the paint?
Yeah, he painted the whole top with the chalkboard paint.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
And then he took a permanent felt tip marker and did 1-inch square on the whole top. And all we have to do is grab chalk, erasers, boom. Just put it all right there. It's perfect. People could write on the table, keep track of, like, you know, hit points and whatever.
If I was going out of town, I'd do that. I'd make that a project. That'd be neat.
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty economical way of doing it. It's not that expensive. If you got an old tabletop, you could do it with any old table, I would assume.
Yeah.
Or you could build one yourself, like an old work table you might have. Or if you could find one at a garage sale. That's a good way of doing it. And,
now, here's a variation if you have, like, the access to it. I've seen guys use a whiteboard,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the wall.
I use that. I do I have a 3x4 whiteboard that I use. I have a couple of them, actually. Uh-huh. I don't use a full grid. I just use a dot grid so that the lines don't take away from whatever's going on. If I need to freehand, I can freehand with no problem.
Nice.
It works out great.
Very cool.
I've also seen people buy those giant post-it ledger type, you know.
Oh, like that butcher block paper?
Not butcher block, but no, it's, you know how they have, like, where you do the presentation,
gamingpaper.com,
you're drawing.
They have.
And they have post-it now has that where they could rip it off and stick it on the wall so you could do, like, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, gaming paper.
Dungeon, and they still have to reference it, but you want to draw something else, you just rip it off and stick it on the wall next to it and then draw
something
else.
I think Glenn actually went to the wall for that demonstration. It sounded like that.
I go to the wall a lot, so... That's,
okay. What we did, my former group, I should say, is we actually went the distance and we went and bought plexiglass.
Uh-huh.
And put these little little nubs under it so you can slip a map or
that is nice.
Poster board underneath it so you take the, you know, dry erase marker and you just write all over it and move your figures
I've
around.
I've heard of that approach, yes.
It's expensive,
now,
but it's worth it.
Well, There's that approach, but then there's the other extra mile you can go, and I have basically bought out the entire inventory of Dwarven Forge several times.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, that's the extra mile. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's also, where you want all the players' jaws dropping like, wow!
Also, Corey over at Thaco's Hammer. It works. Corey over at Thaco's Hammer, Mr. Audio-Visual Guy, has a projector pointed down on a table.
Yeah.
One of those,
I knew someone was going to mention
the thing, slip the plastic in there. Yeah.
And it's like, I heard that's kind of like the hottest. That seems to be, I don't know the hottest, but it seems like a trend. A lot of DMs are trying to do that. They're going to get a hold of the projectors from like Dell or whatever, hook them up to their laptop, project it down, and boom. Or some people I heard are doing like a projecting it up too from below the table.
Yeah, that's
even
better.
I don't know how that works. So
yeah, they're doing that way. They're also doing it with the whole friggin', you know, widescreen touchscreen is your table.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they had that at Gen Con last year.
Oh. Yeah.
A bunch of the games had the touch. They were pretty really interesting. Wow.
Okay, I guess since we're sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, you're right. This is kind of leading into probably what you were going to say, like different little things that we can use.
Yeah, like I know it's going to get there, is minis.
Oh, yeah.
What do you use? Minis, cardboard heroes, little stones out of the fish tank, dice.
Well, I like to pull them right out of the fish tank when it's dirty, so, you know, it's slimy.
Yeah, especially when you're playing on the elemental plane of Earth, these little stones.
Oh, yeah.
I use cardboard heroes. I'm glad you mentioned that. I used the cardboard heroes. I was fortunate enough a few years ago from Steve Jackson Games able to buy the big cardboard heroes complete booklet.
Oh, wow.
Everything. And what I did is I scanned every page into my computer. So if I want an army of goblins, boom, 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 there I got them. I have enough now of cardboard heroes printed out of all the standard monsters that you encounter, zombies, skeletons, orcs, what have you. I got like a huge, not say a huge, but I have like a tackle box full of these things.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they're perfect. I like using, you know, the old LEDs. I mean, they're cool and everything, but that's expensive as all get out.
Well, it's also a lot of work. Unless you're into that end of the hobby.
It's right.
Quite a bit of work.
Yep.
I like doing it for my own character. I like painting my own minis for my own characters.
Yeah.
We can always, you know, if you're gonna, like a dozen orcs, get out of town.
The Reaper miniatures are pretty good.
There's ways to do it fast. I've been collecting minis ever since the old Chessex, or not Chessex, Citadel box sets for D&D way back in the day. I've still got those miniatures. I've got Ralph, all the Ralparthas, Citadels, all the, I've been getting a lot of the plastic ones from WotC, but my favorite right now is still Reaper. Reaper just takes the cake on quality.
Oh, yeah, Reaper's awesome.
Full on. Do you remember the big box that Citadel used to sell for Warhammer Fantasy, where it had, like, just ton of, like, Skaven or goblins or what, in plastic and in metal? I got, like, one of each of those sitting in plastic.
I know stores that still sell them.
Wow.
You know, and Ralpartha you mentioned, they're still around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yep. they had a booth at Origins. I'm turning around the corner, I'm like, Ralpartha? Oh, my God, they're still here? I thought they were gone. I really thought they weren't in existence anymore.
Jeez, we were talking about this. We should have Corey on here. He's like Mr. Miniature. Well, what do you use, Vin? Oh, you use the stones out of the fish tank.
No, I don't use that. I use whatever. I don't really care what it is. If it's like a die or a coin or whatever I need to use at the time to illustrate what something is. Yeah, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those guys like, oh, I have to have orcs. I must go out and buy tons of orcs.
Right.
I used to use gummy bears.
Kill them and eat them.
Yeah, you kill them, you
eat
them.
That's awesome. Or also M&M's. M&M's or Skittles work the same way.
Our friends, when we play
What do you do if someone raises dead?
Spit them up?
Yeah.
Well, we used to play, when I used to play Champions, all of us used like the chits, but we would like customize the chits with like the logo of the hero on there or something like that.
Gotcha.
I had a series of ones I did one time. I don't know how, when my Macintosh days, I called them Worm's Eye View, WYRM, because it was a top down view of people and things. And I used to use those for like ninjas and, you know, anything kind of like that. Somebody with a gun. Oh, here's somebody with a gun. Okay, he's got a gun.
Awesome.
I just like those cardboard heroes. I think it's a nice balance between, you know, you're not, you got something to represent what you want, but you're not really going out of your way to spend a lot of money out of your own pocket and devoting a lot of work to it. I think that's a
until somebody balance. Opens the door and the breeze comes through and knocks them all down.
Well, that's why when you cut them off, you use pennies for the bottoms.
That's right.
I think this also kind of leads into other stuff like mapping. Maybe software and programs.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. What kind and, of, I mean, there's some good free ones out there.
Oh, yeah. The one I used in the past is AutoRealm. I think it almost,
yes.
And it's for free. And you know what? For what it does, it's really good.
Yeah.
I think it for just basic, you know, dungeon crawl stuff, maybe even doing some, you know, world mapping. If you don't want a whole lot of bells and whistles, you can't beat it for free. So,
well, the nice thing about having the old second edition CD core rules on CD is you get
Dungeon Mapper. Kind of, yep.
Yeah, you get Campaign Cartographer with it, which is an older version, but it still works.
Oh, yeah.
But the learning curve, my God.
Yeah.
It's a CAD program, and it shows.
Yeah, it's basically a mini version, mini AutoCAD.
Yeah.
Version right and there. It's crazy.
I play with it for 5 minutes and then go, I can't do anything with this.
Yeah, your brain locks up. You're like,
I'd use the AutoRealm like Nick does, but other than that, I don't allow programs at the table usually. Too much of a distraction.
That or I keep.
I never use them at the table, but I'd use them to maybe create some props or set up some, you know, fields or maps or whatever I got to work with. I've used the dungeon mapper that comes with the core rules set. I've got Campaign Cartographer 1 and 2, and I got Dungeon Genie as well.
Dungeon Genie, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I remember using that in the past. That's a pretty good one, too.
And how about that set that you bought recently, Nick, with the cards and everything? The dungeon deck?
Oh, Dungeon Deck, that's a little different. That's not exactly as far as map. Well, it comes with a map, but it plots a whole little mini-adventure for you. You know, you get the little plot hook, and, you know, it gives you a little bit like dungeon dressing, and then you pull a card, and there's the map of the dungeon. So
There's also a free one out there called Dungeon Crafter. That's pretty good. It's on Dungeon Crafter 3, I think. And I think they have a paid version, but they also have a free version that'll probably do just about what you need.
There's also something, I think it's on the Wizard site. If you go into the download section, there's a mapping tool, a map tools thing there that gives you basically map tiles that are just really unattributed, and you can turn them whichever way you want and kind of stack them all together. Use that as well.
If you
other places where I just hoard piles and piles of graphics of maps, and if I can't use mapping software to do it, I'll just hack it together on PowerPoint or in a paint program and just put them together.
Sorry. Yeah, you can also jump over to the Wizards 4 website if you could find it. They used to have a 3.5 section. It's still there if you could find the link, and has an auto dungeon creator there.
Huh. They also, remember when 3rd edition first came out, in the back they had all those dungeon tiles in the back.
Yep.
I found those around the web, and I've got like a big fat manila folder crammed with stuff I've printed out in full color. Some of it treated, some of it not. So,
yeah, I remember Goodman Games a few years ago when they were doing their Dungeon Crawl Classics.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of did a thing with, they created the whole a Dungeon Geomorphs kit. Remember back in TSR had the Dungeon Geomorphs?
I remember
that. They did a Dungeon Geomorphs thing too. I bought that. It's a cool little handy aid. You know, if you want to just you want to throw something together.
The Fantasy Paths box sets, if you remember those.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I had like 3 or 4 of them. Fantasy Paths, City Paths, Village Paths, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Write us and tell us what you use.
That's right.
Save or die. Go ahead, Glenn.
It's all right. You could do the phone number. Save or die podcast at gmail.com.
The phone number is blah, 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 blah. Anyway.
I was expecting that.
And we'll head to DM Fiat.
Nope. Sorry.
What?
Nope, you're wrong. Look it up.
I don't have to look it up. It's common knowledge.
Nope. No, no, no.
DM Fiat this week.
Robicar.
What the heck was that?
That was a DM Fiat.
Did you understand that this time, Vince?
No.
Okay. Whatever.
He doesn't understand the automobile.
I do that every week. He just thinks it's some plate buzzing him or something.
What do we have, Glenn?
We have races class 2 dwarves.
This is second part of the 3-part series, I believe.
Yes, it is.
Talking about dwarves.
Dwarves in basic.
Not dwarfs. The little guy on his knees.
That golfs.
That golfs, and it's kind of funny.
The dwarves.
But I like every once in a while someone will say a dwarf. Or a dwarf. Tim Conway?
Yeah, Tim Conway. Dwarf on golf, all that.
Nick, you're the historian. What do we know about... Yes, you are. You know you are. You've admitted it.
I got stuck with that, huh?
Yes. Well, I do have a degree in it.
I got stuck with emails, yeah.
What can you tell us about dwarves?
Well, if we're going to just... Are we going to go with the historical aspect, maybe where they originated from?
Yeah, sure.
Well...
Game-wise.
Or game-wise. We can go game-wise. I would... There's two ways to go about it. Like, historically, the mythology around the dwarves, it seems to have been rooted in, like, Norse mythology about dwarves, primarily. Maybe in some... And maybe some parts of England and Germany as well, but in the game itself, as far as dwarves are concerned, maybe I'm wrong on this, maybe I'm right, I don't know. But when I read through the dwarf section in my Moldvay basic book, I mean they're the Tolkien dwarves, you know,
pretty much
short, stocky guys who want gold
and drink a lot of ale,
and drink a lot of ale. A lot of mead, a lot of ale. You know, they...
And pretty much are all fighters-ish.
Pretty much all fighters, yes. They weigh around 150 pounds. They have hair is dark brown, gray or black. Stubborn but practical. Dwarves love hearty meals and strong drink. They value good craftsmanship and are very fond of gold. Part of the attributes to them is they're very resistant to magic. Hence, they have better saving throws against magic.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum requirements for a dwarf, by at least to the Moldvay basic rules, is you have to have a minimum of 13th strength. And they can max out at 12th level. They have infravision, they speak common dwarvish and the alignment tongue of their character, plus they speak gnome, kobold, and goblin. Mm-hmm. So, that's...
What are they, in Moldvay, what do they top out as far as level goes?
12th level.
Yeah, same with Mentzer.
Yeah, that did not change.
So what about allowing dwarves to play other classes? Do you think that would break the rule, the spirit of the game?
No.
Oh, no. All good. That's part of one of the useful things with later editions.
I would play it dwarves classes, races class, only because I'm lazy and not want to put the time in to figure out the other class.
I think it depends. If you're playing, you know, regular D&D, either Moldvay or basic or the old box rules, you know, kind of leave it as it is. Dwarves are cool as they are, but if you get an advanced D&D, it just seems like every time I know people that play AD&D, if they play a dwarf, they're playing a fighter cleric.
Yeah.
It just seems to go with the territory. It's not just a fighter. They're playing a fighter cleric. I'm like, really?
Cleric seems to be the one other class that people want to push it into.
Yes.
Or why not allow them to be a magic user?
I guess that goes against the Dwarvish archetype.
Go ahead, Fawn.
It's hard to do, especially as you push into the later editions, it gets more doable, but it does still kind of make sense. They got to have some kind of dwarven mages for all those dwarven magic items, because they're magic items. They aren't all made by the clerics. There are some of them that clerics can't make.
It's got to be 1% of the society that's got to be magic inclined. So I've had players say, well, how about if I play a dwarf as a thief or a magic user, just to change things up? Mm-hmm. Nothing in the rule book says you can't really do it.
No, of course not.
No.
Dwarven thieves, can make great scouts. And look at those dwarven cities. You got those soaring. If you're going to go all Tolkien, you got places like, the Mines of Moria. Somebody was climbing up there, carving all those columns at the top. And it wasn't the fighter in plate mail.
That's right.
Maybe with magic plate mail. So what more can we do about them?
Well, I can see the 1% magic user thing. And I'd buy them more as thieves if it was a second skill than I would a magic user. But that's just me. Because it seems like every edition's always got that... required paragraph how they're resistant to magic and they're like magic concrete. It just won't go through them, or they can't deal with it, or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's why they push them into clerics, because clerics get their spells from their god,
right,
and their faith, not by trying to manipulate magic. They're more like a vessel for the spells.
I am a vessel
for
my god.
It is easier that way.
Yeah, but anyway, that's what. What else can we do with them?
Yeah,
toss them.
That's true.
Well, if you want to break the rules from the DM side of the screen and make them for interesting NPCs, you can get some interesting results that way. Especially if you just throw the rules out the window and break the mold on them, and make your thief be the leader, or make your dwarf be the leader of a thieves' guild, a very strict and orderly thieves' guild, but merciless nonetheless.
I can see that. And yeah. if we're talking clerics, what about a dwarven druid?
Well, they don't really have. They don't really use that class.
Sure.
But I guess you could.
Underdark druids.
I guess so.
I'm sure. I'd love to run. That'd be very interesting to run across a dwarven druid inside a dungeon or something.
Not even in the Underdark. I mean, druids aren't all forested vales. What about the druids of the mountains? What about the druids of the deserts?
A desert.
Druids of the swamps.
That would be it. Hall of the Mountain King. That would be interesting. A dwarf an Arab dwarf who was like a druid out there in the desert.
Huh.
Wow. I talked to the Kebbles.
Oh boy. Anyway, on that note,
someone's riding a combat scorpion.
Yeah, ooh. That would work.
Ooh.
Wow. Wow. On that note,
I think we'll head into random encounters.
Okay.
We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up my sleeve. Presto!
You will come up no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random Encounters.
So, Random Encounters this week, we have an interesting little monster for you this week. It's called the
Shroom!
The Shrieker.
Ah!
Basically, the Shrieker is just a really giant mushroom that goes, what, Nick?
Ah!
For 1 to 3 rounds.
Well.
It annoys the crap out of your players and just attracts other random monsters for you.
Maybe
it's
an annoyance
to the players and a real delight to the GM, because he can annoy the players.
Oh, I know how it sounds. It's really annoying. It goes, sounds like Fran Drescher's when she laughs.
Said the shrieker, not the whiner. What, you never come in here and visit me?
Oh, boy. kind of a useless monster, just in case you're bored, I would put it in there.
It's a monster magnet. That's what it does.
Yeah, really.
Is.
Yeah. There's only a 50% chance to grab a wandering monster. So,
I mean, they serve a specific purpose in the dungeon a lot of times.
Yeah.
Other than like
annoying the crap out of your players.
Yeah, no, well,
I really can't see a purpose for them other than you're bored as a DM and you want to, you know, have them fight something.
Alarm?
Oh, I can come up with all kinds of reasons for them.
Oh, yeah.
For one, yeah, it can be used to camouflage things because, okay, they're fungus. Fungus grows out of, you know, rotted meat or whatever, so they could be growing on top of the clue you need to find. They could be the alarm system that somebody has set up. You've got the myconoids, the intelligent mushroom men who keep them around as alarms. You know, there's a number of things, even before you start getting into weird variants of them.
Wow.
There you go.
How can we make them better? No fire out of their butt.
They don't have a butt, so...
How do you know they don't have a butt?
They told me.
I got an idea. The shocking shrieker.
The shocking?
It emits an electrical shock.
Yeah, electric.
Ooh, that's good.
It's electric.
Yeah. Now you must you die. Could have them have spores. Crossbreed them with the violet fungus so that they're infectious and lethal as well as noisy. They're fungus. They're going to crossbreed and grow together in plant swarms of slime and stuff anyway.
Psionic shriekers?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not thinking of something I would fool her with, but...
And Glenn, guess what?
What?
There is a Pokemon like this.
Oh, cool. you'll have to tell Crispy about that next time.
Yes.
Okay, one... You found a Pokemon for this, you must die. And then you said, oh, cool. That ain't right. That just...
You don't know Crispy.
No, I know Crispy.
Like the Stewarts will come up with a Doctor Who reference, he'll always come up with something. Oh, you know, that's a Pokemon.
It's true. You can go right
to... You may bang your head against the floor and they're forgiven.
Yes. It's a silly thing, but you can go to the Pokemon website and look around and find so many things to throw into monsters to make them more interesting.
I mean, Cthulhu's in Pokemon now.
We can make a Cthulhu Pokemon.
Cthulhu-mon.
There is.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can make one.
Yeah.
Now they just
you could make them miniature or giant. You could have like a little pocket one, you know, a little tray of one that someone keeps like a bonsai tree on their Thieves Guild desk.
Ooh.
An alarm clock.
Or an alarm if so, you know, if you're like I said in the Thieves Guild, put it on your desk and stuff. Anybody comes in, then you don't. Can you train these things like that? You know, if it's me, don't yell. If it's somebody else, yell.
I don't know.
Apparently,
don't
you can train them to be. They've had literature that says that they're kind of they can be trained to be accustomed to things around them. And why wouldn't they be? You know, if you could have things that would if people if
was there
the
an ecology
that
for that dragon?
Them,
I
yeah,
think there was. Well,
I believe there was.
According to Metzer, they have an intelligence of zero, but there's nothing wrong with the DM bumping that up a bit if they want to do something like trainable shriekers.
Now you also wonder if there's. I think they have been used in a module. The only one I could think of that where they might have been used.
In Search of the Unknown.
That's it.
Bottom left V1. Corner in the middle of the spiral.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Talking shriekers?
Nah. Talking shriekers.
Or a shrieker you put a magic mouth on.
What do you want from me? Go away.
Beware of this.
You could also give him a wind attack.
What?
Wind attack.
Give them a wind attack. Especially if you make them giant
stinking
shriekers.
Cloud.
Yeah, stinking cloud, he burps at you.
Or the other one.
Not even that, I'm just talking about throw you down the hallway with the force of their shriek.
Oh, yeah.
Like a sonic
boom. Sonic attack.
I mean, it is... Well, we already said sonic, but also just physically the wind blowing through them, because they usually draw them as like those mushroom caps with the little spiracules on them around the top, the holes that the shrieking comes out of.
The mushroom
like a concussive
wind.
Thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be so...
The mushroom just cut wind.
Explosive shriekers.
Ooh.
Now, the Church of Cheese
next to
might
gas wars.
Have that. Yeah, that'd be... Wow.
Actually, explosive shriekers, I think they've done that in Hackmaster. They're called mush booms.
Mush booms.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they're called mush booms. They're out of the Hackmaster version of... what module is it?
I don't know, Nick.
I'm trying to think of it. I can picture the... I can see the cover in my mind's eye. I don't remember the name of the adventure. It's the one that takes up after the Giant series. D1.
Their version.
Yeah. Descent into the depths of madness. Yeah.
Yes, descent into the depths of the earth. Their version. They have something called the Mushroom.
Nice. Nice.
You could have them undead, especially if they're going to grow on dead things. Have them
vampiric shriekers.
Okay, now we're just getting to a whole weird area.
Well, it's always good to just throw out ideas so people can just steal it and use it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If you put, take a clapper and adjust it to sound, and when somebody comes in the room, it shrieks, and the lights come on, and
say hello. Lights come on. Glenn, you're reaching now, aren't you?
Yeah.
I like that idea of the sonic shrieker, though. That's
pretty cool. That is really
nice. I like that.
That is cool. All right.
So I guess you tell us how you use it at home, saverdiepodcast@gmail.com, and we'll head into our last segment of the night, Products of Your Imagination.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier, and we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt.
Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons and Dragons games. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
All right, folks, and now we're stepping into Products of Your Imagination, and we have a special guest with us tonight. Along with Nick here sitting in, and Glenn, we have full-on gamer from D20 Radio Forums, as well as OSR Gaming Forums, as he's exploded on there with some writing. How you doing, Mr. Full-on Gamer?
Fine as kind, guys. Glad to be among you for once.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And we actually have you calling in from a secret location right now, correct?
Yeah, I'm deep in the wilds of Onorok.
That's a way of putting it, yeah.
That's a funny way of saying Iraq, but okay.
Oh, now you give it away.
Secret location. Like we had Nick pulling his leg on RFI that Crispy was calling him from Scotland.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Now I feel like a total dork.
So what do we
have? I actually bought that.
I know. So we have a module this week called X3, The Curse of Xanthion. Sounds like a board game, doesn't it?
A bit. Actually, to me, it sounds like the generic D&D title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and I know before we start the review, Full On Gamer, you said you had made a lot of packets and adjustments and a lot of handouts for players.
Yeah, I do a lot of... I'm really big on player handouts and add-ins to my game, so I always expand things a bit. And I've had this module since I bought Expert D&D, so mm-hmm. I've had time to add to it. I've expanded the map, I've done some handouts using some fonts, put some detail into it so that this is really your first wilderness adventure that was a city adventure for the X series, so they wanted you to spend the time to flesh out the city and learn that, so I took the time and did it.
Cool.
Well, that's awesome.
This was the very first city or wilderness adventure for the Expert series.
Yeah.
Okay.
So after X1, yeah.
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 So this adventure starts in the typical tavern, duh.
Yes.
As your players are getting drunk, they hear the rantings of our little dwarf telling them how the Duke of the land who is putting
Duke
all these...
Duke of Runa.
Putting all these crazy things to, like, taxing beer, making people ride their horse backwards, and throwing water. I think there was one with throwing water on certain people, and they had to do all these crazy things, but they're not sure
it
why.
It wasn't even taxing beer. In lieu of using gold, they're using beer to pay the taxes.
Yeah. And then right in the middle of it, this guy comes in with an announcement, and he's just like, well, dwarves are now a sworn enemy, and blah, 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 and they need to get out of town, and if you see a dwarf, and blah, 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 and...
They're going to cut their beard off and stretch them on the rack.
Yes. So the little...
They'll be of appropriate height.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the little grumbling dwarf starts going off on it and screaming and yelling, and pretty much there's your hook to find out more information about this module.
Yeah. Oh, we also have, a beggar in there saying, maybe you should look into this.
Yeah. There's also, like, if the players don't get the idea, the beggar comes in and says, hey, by the way.
Yeah. He's like a running gag through the whole module. Every once in a while,
he's one of those problem NPCs.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's got a sign on him that says "plot hook guy."
Yeah. They don't know where to go.
It doesn't help for later revelations about him, either.
No. Yeah. Yeah, if they don't know where to go, this beggar comes by with a sandwich board that says, "Ask me."
So, Glenn, what else do you know about this module that you like?
Well, you end up going into the barracks of the city guard and find out who's in cahoots with who and all that kind of stuff, and it's basically this temple. I don't know if I should spill this or not.
Hey, it's been out for how many years?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Basically, the Duke is under a curse, and this one...
The curse of Xanathon?
Yeah, Xanathon's the evil high priest of Cerulea, he's got her favor, and so the curse cannot be broken by a removed curse. So, basically, the adventurer's got to go through how many hoops to get the antidote and kill this guy, and you find out that the head of the guard is in cahoots with him, and it basically likes to put you through the ringer. You're on one wild goose chase after another. First year,
basically, the module name gave away the whole thing.
Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of like Tolkien didn't want the Two Towers to be named the Two Towers because he said, or no, the Return of the King to be the Return of the King. Well, there's the whole plot right there in the title.
There you go.
It's the same thing.
This is another one that I hid the module cover behind the DM screen just because I didn't want to give things away off of it.
Good idea. And they also tout this town as a good place for a base for the heroes, which is good that full-on, fleshed it out. Did you use it as a base for the adventurers?
Way back in the day, yeah, we used that as a base. I ran through this as a player at that time, and we were doing Mystara setting, and we actually went from X3 to X1.
Huh. So did you actually have clerics who were from the Temple of the Spooming Nuga? Which is my favorite name in the whole thing.
Well, that's part of why when I got my hands on this as a DM, I shifted things to the Forgotten Realms, made it a Temple of Umberly, a Temple of Torm, and a Temple of Malar instead of, the Spooming Nuga, Credia, and Forsetta.
Yeah, Forsetta sounds like God of Cheese.
Yes. The one thing about this module that really strikes me is they didn't really address is though the PCs are going to roam around the barracks looking for some evidence. So they're going to be going around on the word of this little angry dwarf who tells them where to go. And they're killing, probably, if you look at it a certain way, innocent, lawful, and neutral guards.
Yeah.
Who see them as intruders. So there's no dealt with. Like, the players are killing these good characters, but NPCs, I should say. And there's no, penalty to it.
Basically, I think...
Oh, there's penalty. There's penalty.
But the module doesn't... So let's say a new DM picks this up. A module doesn't really guide him on this.
If they succeed in the whole module, they talk a little bit about pardons in the back for some of the crimes they committed in the process. But you should really take that as a hint that, they should be sneaking more than slaying on their way through some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So basically, at the end, they say, "Oh, and no bickering, arguing about who killed who."
And there's also the fact that what if the players decide just go straight in, kill the Duke's guard, and confront the Duke right away?
Yeah.
That's kind
of find the high priest, shag his butt over here, or put a knife through him, find the stuff, and
What if just confront the Duke right away? What doesn't really cover that option?
No, it doesn't.
Because that's the kind of thing my players would do.
Yeah, you're right.
They like to break adventures.
Yeah, I could see this being thrown into the Knights of the Dinner Table comic strip and them just like stomping right through it and just gutting it.
Yeah.
Well, they'd burn the town down anyway, so.
Yeah,
which pretty much. One of my parties actually half did.
Oh, my God.
Yes, the Duke.
They need a distraction to get into the guard palace, so they set the docks wards on fire and the warehouses to pull guards away, so they wouldn't have to kill guards when they were going through the barracks.
Right. Oh, very nice, very nice. And the whole and the main plot is like they kick the dwarves out, so they start a war between Rockholm and the town, so the Duke can go in there, or rather the Captain of the Guard go in there and take control, which he's not going to do anyway because the priest is going to backstab him and start a religious war.
And then there's a larger part of the plot in the module to where the Khanate, which is like right next door, is hoping things go bad between Rockholm and
yeah, they got one church in there that's neutral, and it's like, well, let's just like suggest to the heroes they go do this because we can't take direct action in this. Say what?
And all this time
is that the Temple of Moby Dick?
No, not the Spooming Nooga. I think it's the Fromagians.
And the whole time this is happening, there's a big giant army.
You got it backwards. The Spooming Nooga is the neutral temple, which is why I swapped them for Umberlee. That way it would be like the whole seas are their thing. They're worried about the ocean. You know, if it was pirates, yeah, they'd be involved. They just got to worry about fishermen. If these people come in and take over the town, well, they're still going to need the fishing fleet. They're still going to need the fishermen. The boat people don't worry about it.
Yeah. But there's like one priest that's going, no, this is wrong, but I can't really do this without pissing off everybody at the temple. So, and my God. So I'm just going to sort of nudge him as a beggar.
Well, that was the Forsetta guy, and that's why I had to, A, gimp him into an NPC that was a lot more like a cloistered cleric kind of dude instead of someone with serious levels who should be dealing with this anyway. Physically made him kind of an infirm gimp dude. As well, A, to help with his cover as a beggar, and B, okay, he's a Forsetta guy, whatever, duty guy for the realms I made him Torm. Okay, it's his duty to obey the laws. The laws are coming out whacked, so we're going to change the guys who are doing the laws. Okay, that's a more viable hook for adventurers.
Yeah. So what? Go ahead,
I just can't get over this when he said Temple of Fromage. I'm just now thinking of like a whole religion devoted to the worship of various types of cheese.
Hey, they could be related to the god potatoes. God of potatoes. Now, what did you guys think of the big bads? The evil priest and the captain of the guards?
They seem too typical to me.
They seem kind of carpentry.
Yeah.
I mean, they perform exactly like
you did have.
What?
Go on, full on. Go on.
Okay.
They're B-rated movie villains. I mean,
yeah.
I basically took Xanathon, the priest, and went totally Nicolas Cage freak out on it, because that's what he is. He's an over-the-top freak out guy.
Yeah. Old Jack Nicholson stuff, yeah. To me, it's like, wow, they performed exactly the way I thought of it. He was going to hole up in his thing and just, snarl and sneer at him and let him try and kill him. But when I get to, like, the captain of the guards is, okay, they're walking down the hall. He bursts through the door with the other two guys and goes. I said, really? That's it. That's all he's got, right? Really? Just bursts through the door and, okay, I guess this guy is not the brightest, brightest pack in the deck, card in the deck, so.
Hey, he's a retired pirate.
Yeah. But he just doesn't come off as very bright for some reason.
Well, I'm looking at Xanathon. He's a 14th level cleric.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive in its own right. But armor class 9? Really? I don't think so.
Yeah.
He didn't spend too much time on it,
I'm like...
Well, he's using the plot hook item. He's got that whole immortality thing. Which
that's right, yeah. I am invulnerable. Like
where he's completely invulnerable to damage, so
he doesn't care about armor.
You don't have the heart of Davy Jones, so he's not going to die.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right. Hits the picture of him with the arrow in his chest on the first page.
Yes. Yeah, let's give it away here. and the cover, I love it. The cover has got them fighting a chimera.
Yeah.
And the chimera is a wrong way. So when they're trying to go get the hardest stuff, if they go the wrong way, they'll run into the chimera. If they don't, no, there's no chimera.
But it's a nice cover.
Yeah, it was a little trouble selling, getting people on the right path when they went, the cover has a chimera. We're supposed to find the chimera. Okay. And what are you going to do after?
Take the treasure?
Yeah. So what are we going to rate this one, Glenn?
God. 2 dragons, 3 maybe four with full-ons house rules add-ons and notes.
Okay.
Because as it is, it's just, it's to me, it's a cardboard adventure. That's what it seems like. I mean, yeah, it's good for a night, maybe a night's frivolity, but the town would need some work if they're going to use it regularly. And those villains to me are a little on the lame side. That's all.
Nick?
Out
of Dragons, 5.
I would rate it average, 3.
Okay.
I do like the idea of you as a DM having to make the town of Runa as what you want it to be, as far as the tavern names and where the businesses are. It's totally random, so you can make out any way you want to. The pretty much fit your tastes. I do like that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I really didn't like when I read through this again is it's very, I don't want to say very, well, I guess I, yeah, it's railroady.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think this could have been done better if, even though that there were clues all around the town, that you didn't need to go from one clue to the next clue to the next clue.
You know what this order. You know what this adventure reminded me of?
What?
The sample adventure in the basic Marvel superheroes, The Day of the Octopus. Those guys, you play the heroes, and if you don't get to the next step, all of a sudden Thor shows up and basically points you in the right direction. If you can't kill the big bad at the end, he will show up, throw his hammer, and kill the big bad. So it's like, you feel like, yeah, I'm on the railroad, boy. Doot, doot, you know?
Yeah, there was a way this could have been done better if you were going to use this as a, basically, it's a mystery. It's almost like, I hate to use another example from another game, but one game that does mysteries really well is Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah,
and you leave all, and it's pretty much open ended. If you find certain things, clues, whatever information, it could lead you here, here, or here, and it doesn't have to be exactly in that order.
Yeah.
That I think could have been done here.
That's also the problem with games that are largely detective work.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And Mr. Full-On Gamer, what do you rate this?
I go with a 3 vanilla, 5 after revisions. And it does have a bit of a railroad feel on it. But again, it's a detective story, and they've got to have their clues. But, you know, I'm not necessarily tied to the clues being in sequence. And I've had parties find the clues out of sequence. And it had some pretty interesting consequences as a result of that, you know. But yeah, this is still it's still really a universal story, because I've used this in other systems. You can import it into Call of Cthulhu, or you can import it into Shadowrun. I've used it in Star Wars, you know.
Wow.
You can use
it
for pretty much anything just by reskinning it and running it as is. And I had a lot of fun doing the detail work to flesh out. This was, you know, training camp for me as a young game master to build a city and make it vibrant, and I hope I did that with the notes I packed together for you.
Yeah,
I like that part, and I also like the plot of the thing. I really do like the plot. I think it's kind of cool because you have a lot of there's certain things going on. There's an outside influence from the Khanate that they might try to take over if there's a civil war. So there's a lot of things going on, and it seems like also a little bit of a race for time, too.
You know, if you were going to redo this, one module you should look at with an eye towards redoing this one is The Veiled Society, which is also kind of a detective story.
True.
With very little battle. And it's like, I use that as an example of what you could do with it.
Well, first of all,
how about you, Vince?
I have to say, Full-On Gamer, you have to stop by the OSR Gaming Forums and post up in the library section your notes.
Yes, please.
When you have a chance.
Oh, definitely.
So we can all see that.
Absolutely, no problem.
It's free for everybody to upload their stuff there. You can just go right in there and say, I have a character sheet. Look at it, guys. Boom. Or I have note information. Boom, here you go. But I rate this, I like this because there's some good role-playing opportunity here. But it is very railroady. I'm going with a 3.
Yeah.
Probably with, after looking at Full-On's notes, I would give it a 4, maybe a 5. But I don't like railroad. I don't like the whole, well, guys, here's the beggar's going to come up and say, psst, you need to go this way.
Yeah, yeah.
That just bothers me. The little dwarf guy was funny as heck, though.
And the beggar speaks in riddles to boot.
Yeah, so he's like a little Yoda running around.
Yeah.
It is more interesting if there's a dwarf in the party.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, what are we looking at? Probably around a 3 for this module.
Yeah.
That's as is a 3 with full-on gamers extensions and notes. It sounds like from you guys, I haven't seen them yet, but yeah, 4 or 5 probably, huh?
Yeah.
I looked on the internet about this module. A lot of people were saying that it's a really well-written and classy done module, but they think that it's just a waste of time because the villains are just a bunch of idiots.
Yeah. Yeah, that shows you what kind of a knucklehead reviewer I am. I read it, I thought, oh, this ain't, it's pretty good. And then I read, like, RPG Net's review.
Yeah.
And made me rethink the whole thing.
Yeah, they have an interesting review on RPG Net. I'm looking at it right now. While you guys were talking, I looked it up just to see what they said.
Uh-huh.
And they rated, it looks like for style, a 4, substance, a 1. I wasted my money.
Yeah. Well, if you get a city you can do something with, I never think that's a waste of money.
What were you going to say, Full On?
I was going to say that the NPCs you can still do a lot with, and like I said, I've also run this through every edition except the one that shall not be named, and I've had a lot of fun retweaking the NPCs to suit the new edition with things that they can do, and you can get some really amazing things out of that and really color up your NPCs a lot.
It
also makes it a lot harder for the PCs.
I'm very interested to hear how you you imported this into Star Wars, though.
Yeah.
It's a port town or a port station.
Right.
I've done this a lot with a lot of modules. I take modules and recast them for other types of adventure settings all the time, and you just take it at its face value and you just change terms to reskin them in whatever setting you're going to go into. If it's going to be Star Wars, you change, you know, swords and bows to blasters and lightsabers in some cases, or other melee weapons. You extend your distances from, instead of, you know, region to region or town to town, you make it system to planet to planet or system to system. You know, you just upscale everything. You make your undeads into droids or Sithly type things. It's very easy to do with just a little bit of imagination.
And you'd have
I've done this treatment for Ravenloft.
Oh wow!
Have you
really?
Have you ever had any problems?
I'll send you my notes.
Yeah, have you ever had any problem in Star Wars with, like, ranges? Because, I mean, I don't think everybody's going to be carrying a lightsaber, and there's going to be a lot more blasters and things like that.
Not really, not a problem, because they're still messing around inside ships or inside stations or inside cityscapes or whatever, so it's still, you know, blaster range, you know, door-to-door fighting, so it's not really a problem. It's not open field combat.
Right.
Strahd the Sith Lord.
Oh yes, very fun. The Slave Lord series is also a perfect conversion. I've got those well detailed out.
Interesting to know. So actually, after that review, Glenn, you know what that means. We have to Products of Your Imagination is over.
Yes.
We traveled on that long highway of the broken tears.
Yes.
How are you running down the highway this week, Glenn?
I am just strolling down with a beggar on one side and a priest of the spooming nuga on the other.
Hand in hand.
Hand in hand, doing the Wizard of Oz thing.
Oh, jeez. As we're all going, we're going to just take it off this week and...
Bye, Nick. Bye.
Say goodbye to Nick for coming on.
Off into the dust storm.
And thank Full On Gamer for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
And good night.
It was a lot of fun.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
If you have any comments, please email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com or visit saveordie at saveordie.info. Follow the cast on Facebook / saveordiepodcast or follow them on Twitter @theevildm.